My name is Justin Hines. I'm coming from the University of Michigan. I'm here to talk to you today about what I think is a really interesting community-level intervention to promote health. To begin, though, let's start with some information that many of you probably already know. So it's a fact that the U.S. spends more on health care, both in total and per capita, than anybody else, but we don't really reap the benefits in terms of total population health ratings. We're not nearly as high as we should be. And it doesn't seem like throwing a bunch of money at the problem is really doing us a lot of good. So investing a lot of money in health care just hasn't been reaping these benefits that we would hope. So others have suggested that maybe we should look at a more holistic model of social and health-related activities and coming up from more of a local or a grounded approach. And this is not a new idea. This actually began back in the 1970s, but it's really starting to pick up speed now in this concept of health and wellness foundations. And so health and wellness foundations, just broadly defined, are nonprofit organizations that are interested in promoting health. And they are an increasingly common body in the United States, so we have some related research. There are about 184 nonprofit organizations that classify themselves as wellness foundations, and their idea and their goals are to promote health within communities. We also have a number of health promotion foundations, and so it's kind of together, unfortunately, the definition is a little ambiguous, but these types of organizations provide some benefits to the communities that other organizations might not. And so a particular one is this idea that they can improve community capacity and program sustainability. So we're not talking about one-off programs that happen and then they're done. When you're embedded in a community, you can get some of these interventions going, these health-related interventions, and keep them going. And health and wellness foundations can do this through a couple of different means. So they have the management financial capacity. So if you're thinking about a community organized intervention, this is the onus and the burden is on the members of the community. When you have this nonprofit organization that has some resources, they can take over some of that management responsibility. They can help with some of the finances related to the activities. They can be a leader within the community. So when you're embedded into the community, like a lot of these foundations are, you have some of that institutional legitimacy that allows you to interact with the people in your community and really get some of these things done and keep them moving. And then we have this idea of non-governmental autonomy. When you're not for profit, when you're not using federal dollars, you have some flexibility that other organizations might not. And from our research, we found this is not true of all of them, but a majority of them do take this more comprehensive and holistic approach to community health. And so we think of these as upstream organizational agents in the sense that they can do some of the coordinating, they can do some of the managing, and they can provide some of those financial resources that then people on the ground can carry out some of their goals and objectives. So, why did I talk about all that? Because we're going to talk about one in particular. And so this particular organization wanted to create these broad-based, comprehensive initiatives. So we're talking about multiple simultaneous strategies of interventions that they think are going to attack some natural or some common barriers to health. And they wanted to try to engage a community. In fact, they're going to engage five communities. And the goal of it is to encourage, support, and adopt health-promoting behaviors. So when you think about an organization or a foundation, in this case, doing that, a logical question comes to mind: how does a foundation guide? And now, so this is important. We're not just talking about a foundation bringing in field-level understanding and creating structure that people are going to follow. They want to do that, but they also want to empower these community members to address some of the health and wellness issues that they see coming from their own perspectives. And so the Chelsea Area Wellness Foundation started in 2009 when the Chelsea Community Hospital was sold to Trinity Health. They took about $25 million and set that aside to create this foundation with a 15-member board, and it's an enduring organization, and they're using that $25 million as principal to continue some community activities. They've adopted a public health approach to wellness. So we're talking about kind of primary prevention care here, not really, you know, the focus on disease. We want a population or community level focus rather than looking at the individual. And consistent with this idea of a community approach, they want to see some partnerships. We're not just talking about engaging health professionals, but also educators and community members, nonprofit organizations, private organizations, all these guys coming together and hopefully synergistically to improve the health and welfare of the community. And so their mission statement, I think it's a neat one: as residents of the healthiest communities in the Midwest, we'll choose to eat better, move more, avoid unhealthy substances, and make healthy connections with others. And so these four vision elements you're going to start to see coming into play when I talk about the results of what's happened. So this is some of the structure that they're going to provide. But again, every time they add structure, they're also going to try to add autonomy so that this really can be a grounded community-level, community-driven health initiative. And so their primary initiative was, they call it the Five Healthy Towns Initiative. We'll call it 5H. And so we have these five communities, smaller communities in Michigan, and they have these four abetting counties. Now, there's something really interesting about these communities. Two of them, the largest population is in Washtenaw County, which is also home to Ann Arbor, Michigan, University of Michigan, go blue, Ypsilanti, Eastern Michigan University. And then we have all these commuters that find their way into Detroit. And so you have a lot of affluence in the community. And in terms of the 83 counties in Michigan, Washtenaw County does pretty well. We're in the top three or top five each year. Now, if you move just to the west of us, the county immediately to the west of us, you have Jackson County. Jackson, Michigan was once a thriving city, but right around the time of the automobile collapse, their economy also collapsed, and since then, their health outcomes have been near the bottom of the state. Now, if you take these two communities that are in Washtenaw County that are part of this Five Healthy Towns, their health outcomes at a population level look a lot more like those from Jackson County than the rest of Washtenaw County. And so there are these interesting disparities with these five rural communities in terms of what we would expect their health outcomes to be. And these are based off community surveys like the BRFSS, and Michigan State does a survey and that kind of stuff. They're not nearly as high as we would hope or think they could be. And so they took those five towns and they said, we're going to take this $25 million. And each year we're going to give you guys some money, but there's a catch. To do this, we don't want you to apply to us, say, hey, we have this great idea, and we'll review each plan individually and either say yes or no. They said, we want you to go into your community, find the people who are passionate about this, and create a community coalition. So these five towns were charged with this idea of creating community coalitions, and their job was then to go into their communities, figure out where their needs were going to be, talk to the people in their communities, find some of those indicators that they really think that they can change, use evidence-based strategies, and at the end of the day, come up with what they called a comprehensive wellness plan over the next 5 years of how they can make their community better based on their specific community needs. Pretty neat, right? So rather than taking all the control, we're going to empower these communities to tell us or tell the foundation what we need to do, and we'll help you. We'll provide support and resources to the best we can. We'll provide some structure. For example, the idea that they have to come up with these comprehensive wellness plans, but the empowerment is really with these individuals within the community. All right. So we thought this was a really cool idea. And in order to determine how cool of an idea we thought this might be, we went into the field. And so we started attending some of these meetings. We went to coalition meetings. We went to the foundation meetings. We went to the community advisory council meetings where they have board members and the executive officers of the foundation and the community members come together and talk about what's going on. We started interviewing folks. So the observations were more kind of behavioral level measures that we could see. How are the actual behaviors manifesting themselves? But look, let's think about some of these subjective experiences too. So we got these folks to come out and talk to us. We talked to the foundation folks. We talked to the heads of the coalitions. We talked to the community members. We asked them, so why did you get involved with this thing? What are some of your impressions? What is the structure of your coalition look like? What is the relationship between your coalition, and the four other coalitions in the area? How about the relationship between the foundation and the coalitions? All these things to try to get an idea of how people were thinking about what this foundation decided to do. And then as a kind of a method of triangulation, we took any kind of documentation or archival data that we could find, meeting minutes, agendas, websites, anything that they created, information about the counties, information from the surveys and the health surveys. We're using all that to, again, as just a way to get a complete picture of what's going on. And so we would get this data, we'd think about it for a little while, we'd try to bring in some of that theory from the field, go back out, collect more data, think about it for a little while, keep on reiterating that against the theory until we found saturation. And after about a year, we think we got it. So what do we think is neat about what we found? So the first thing, and I'm just going to keep on hitting this over the head, is that the foundation kept on trying to strike this balance between structure and autonomy. Structure and autonomy. So by providing a certain amount of structure, for example, they wanted all these towns, you could come up with anything that you want, but one thing that you had to do was address one of these four vision elements of the foundation. And so you can see that even though these towns, I mean, there's a lot of diversity in terms of what they decided to do, how many programs they wanted to focus on their attention, whether or not they were new versus old, whether or not they were collaborations or if they were doing them independently, the types of partner organizations, all those things, there's a fair amount of diversity. But you notice that the foundation required that they at least focus on either eating better, moving more, avoiding unhealthy substances, or connecting with others. And we get this even though if you think of like a completely top-down structure, you'd probably have 25%, 25%, 25%, 25%. Sorry, the four columns on the right should add up to 100. That's what we would expect with just a very rigid structure. But they didn't say you had to do that. You said just focus on one. And you can see that some weighted more other community concerns more than others. So there was at least a chance for them to try to find the things that were most important to their communities and then work around them. We were excited to see the number of communities that reached out to others and did some joint projects. This was something that the foundation also tried to facilitate, and we'll talk about that in a couple of slides. But a lot of diversity for five towns that basically were said, we'll give you $600,000 a year and you need to help make your communities better. How are you going to do that? All right, and so a particular question that we had, when you do this, it's almost like a Darwinian idea, right? So you have five towns that are separated in a 25 square mile chunk of land, and if you gave them all this money and all this autonomy, you might expect that they would be completely different. Their comprehensive plans would look completely different. Their interventions that they want to try to implement would be completely different. Their structure, their group, their coalition structure would all be different. But the coalition did a few things that we think are really important that allowed for some similarities to start to emerge. And so, first of all, just look at the number of these interventions that are the same. And how this happened was through a lot of community building and coalition interaction that the foundation didn't require, but they were certainly proponents of. So when I talked about this community advisory committee council, where they bring in the leaders and allow the sharing of ideas, all these things start to lead to at least some shared practices. And I want you to notice like the group structure. That's a great example of it. So it says four subgroups or subcommittees. So each one of these five towns has a subcommittee for eating more, moving more, eating better, for the four vision elements. This was not a foundation idea. This was a coalition's idea that others thought, hey, this is a good idea, and I think we should do the same type of thing. But then you also see some evidence of the structure that the foundation was trying to implement. So, for example, reporting their monthly meetings, the deliverables that they had to give to the foundation. So, for example, like their comprehensive wellness plan, it had to have certain elements, and they wanted to see those, and everybody gave those. But then you go down to the bottom half of this table, and the diversity just kind of explodes. So you have a lot of other programs that were not, I mean, other communities didn't adopt. They either said, oh, this is not for us, or we want to do something on our own. You have a group structure. I only picked out two because the other two are in the middle, but you have one that's very hierarchical, very democratic in the way they vote. They have a solid leadership structure that's elected, basically, whereas another one, it's a completely flat organization. Everybody's vote kind of works in the same way. And then the group processes in terms of the timeline and how long it took for the needs assessment and the civic assessment and trying to figure out what are some of those measures that we want to try to move and how long is it going to take us and when we're going to start implementing our intervention. Some were just right off the bat, we're going to get going. So others said, we want to take a step back. We want to make sure we're doing this, and that before we get going. So just a lot of diversity, and I think that was part of the autonomy that the foundation gave them. So this is great balance between structure and autonomy. All right, and so from our research, basically, and this is more at this point of the research, all the towns had submitted and had their comprehensive wellness plans approved, so that would have been all the interventions that they plan to do over the next 3 years. And we found kind of three things that we think the foundation did that allowed this to happen. So first was this idea of brokerage and trying to connect the different ideas from all the different coalitions and basically pick out some of the what they would call the pearls of one community coalition and share them with the others. This is from the director. We're trying to encourage the communities to look at the other communities to see what's going on well and borrow and adapt. Adapt and adapt so that they can find out what will work in their community. And I'll just emphasize it, in their communities, because it might be great for one community but not the other. And the foundation was okay with this and they celebrated that. But if they thought there was a great idea, they want to tell everybody else about it too. And so this was very much at the organizational, or excuse me, the foundation level. Then we get into this the interaction of the coalition specifically. And so when we had this joint committee formation, this was a structure imposed by the foundation. We want to have these people coming together. But what they did, they brought in board members and they brought in their exec team, but then they just left them to their own devices. They let the conversation just arise from the coalition members, and it was completely coalition driven, and that's where this unique sharing of opportunities and ideas started to happen. And that's where we started to see a lot of the similarities between the coalitions. Not because of the foundation, they just created the space for this interaction to happen. But it was the coalition members themselves that actually were the impetus. So we have these CAC meetings periodically, all the coalitions sending in their group heads. We did a lot of feedback, a lot of back and forth. All right, well, Town 5 is doing this and Town 2 is doing that. You know, we kind of shared ideas on that. And then we debated last night the format of the comprehensive wellness plan. And then the last thing that I think the foundation did that really facilitated this, and this is something that we thought from the get-go would be the driving force. This is the resources, and we thought it would be all that money. But it turned out the money might have been one of the least influential things. A lot of these interventions that started happening happened before the money was even in place. If you can believe that, the foundation got these people to come together to start sharing ideas, to start implementing interventions to make their communities better without spending a dime. Now, they gave them resources, and that's something that we didn't think about, but it just became evident. So instrumental resources, informational resources, human capital resources. John, the pseudonym for the associate director, this is an example. From the coalition, is on the lookout for anything that's out there that could be useful to us as a model and so on. He has a lot of information for a grocery store intervention. He did the research on, okay, how much should we put in the grant for marketing consultant to help the grocery store, you know, kind of focus some attention on healthy options. So the idea behind this program was, let's talk to local grocery stores and get some of that junk food out of the line of sight and put some healthier options there. This is a community-led intervention, and that kind of intervention takes a lot of time, and it takes some research and additional resources. Will this be effective? Why might this be effective? And the associate director, he did that research for them. He helped them. He guided them in terms of, this is a model that could potentially work. This is a structure that has not worked, or here are some positives and negatives. But then ultimately, the coalition made that decision. So just the third way that we thought the foundation really facilitated this process was through resource provision, but not the kind of resources that we thought. I mean, ultimately, it will come down to all that money that's there. But they're providing a lot more than just money. All right. So after those three findings, I mean, this really was kind of the process evaluation of this community-level intervention. And next thing we want to do is we want to start looking at all these interventions that they're starting to use. And we realize this is they're trying to move population health indicators. And to move that needle, you're going to need more than 3, probably more than 5, maybe even more than 7 to 10 years to start to see, you know, indicators on the BRFS start to change. But we can at least get an idea from the community. What do they think of these interventions that are already going on? What do they think of the coalition? What is their relationship between the coalition, I mean, their community coalition and themselves and some of the people around them? So once we can start gathering that data, and it's a perfect example of community-based participatory research and evaluation, because we want to come in and do that from the top level, but as part of the structure that they required, they want to see the coalitions evaluate themselves and their own programs. So that had to be written into their comprehensive wellness plan. So we'll have two different ways of evaluating the same type of ideas, which we think could be lead to something really interesting. And then finally, we want to take a look at groups where there have been traditional inequities or barriers to health and health-related decisions. And so we want to look at women's participation in these local decision-making committees and groups around their health and wellness. And just to close, I want to say a special thanks to the Sharp Center for Women and Girls who are funding this study, and then also the Chelsea Area Wellness Foundation for letting us into their community and to introducing us to their coalitions, and I appreciate your time and attention.
Thank you.